I'd like to call the Senate State Affairs Committee a meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it is Tuesday, February 25th. The time now is 3:30 p.m. We are in the Belts Committee Room in Juneau, Alaska. Let's see. Members present, Senator Vice Chair Bjorkman, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Yunt, and myself, Chair Kawasaki. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Before we start, I'd like to thank Carrie Tupoa from Records, Senate Records, and Naomi Boyles as the moderator with the Legislative Information Office. On today's agenda, we have a second hearing on Senate Bill 43 on Women's History Month by Senator Gray Jackson, and we will look to the will of the committee. We have a first hearing and invited in public testimony on Senate Bill 40, Hispanic Heritage Month, also by Senator Gray Jackson, a first hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 6 on Washington, D.C. statehood by Senator Tobin, and a first hearing on Senate Joint Resolution number 10, Hmong Veterans Congressional Gold Medal by Senator Wilikowski. With that, we will go ahead and take up Senate Bill 43 on Women's History Month. This was heard a week ago. Senator L.V. Gray Jackson is here before us to present the bill one more time. Her staff, Deidre Goyens, is welcome to come up and summarize the bill if she'd like. Starting Saturday. Saturday is the month of March, so we're very timely in this. Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name and your affiliations for the record.
Thank you, Senator Chair Kawasaki and members of the committee. I really appreciate being here this afternoon. Again, this is Senator Gray Jackson, representing District G in Anchorage. I'm here with my staff, Deirdre Goins. As we approach another Women's History Month, it is imperative that we formally recognize this important celebration in state statute. With more women serving in the legislature than ever before, we have a responsibility to uphold and expand this representation. By doing so, we ensure that our daughters and our granddaughters can see themselves as vital contributors to Alaska's future. Honoring Women's History Month in law reaffirms our commitment to equality, empowerment, and the enduring impact of women in our state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Are there any questions for the senator or staff? Okay, hearing and seeing none, we will go ahead once again to open up to public testimony. Is there anybody here or online who'd like to testify on Senate Bill 43? Nobody online and nobody in the room? Okay, we will go ahead and close public testimony. Are there any final questions of committee members? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Bjorkman.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 43, Work Draft 34-Lima-Sierra-0081/A as an ANVIC be reported out of committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Okay, hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 43, Work Draft 34-LS-0081/A is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note. We will we'll sign at the end, and we'll transition right into Senate Bill number 40. Senate Bill number 40 is Hispanic Heritage Month. It's once again sponsored by Senator L.V. Gray Jackson. Senator L.V. Gray Jackson and her staff, Deidre Goyens, are here to present the bill.
Thank you, welcome. Chair Kawasaki, members of the committee. I want to thank you for this opportunity to present Senate Bill 40 today. La Senate Bill 40 busca establecer formalmente el periodo entre el 15 de septiembre y el 15 de octubre de cada año como el mes de la residencia hispana en Alaska. Este reconocimiento se alinea con la celebración federal del mes de la herencia hispana, un periodo dedicado a honrar y celebrar las ricas historias, culturas y contribuciones de los hispanoamericanos. Senate Bill 40 seeks to formally establish the period between September 15 and October 15 of each year as Hispanic History Month in Alaska. This recognition aligns with the federal observance of Hispanic Heritage Month, a time dedicated to honoring and celebrating the rich histories, cultures, and contributions of Hispanic Americans. Hispanic and Latino communities have played an essential role in shaping our state and our nation. Their contributions span across industries, business, education, public service, science, and the arts, enriching our communities and strengthening our economy. By designating this month in state law, we affirm the importance of recognizing and celebrating these contributions in a meaningful and consistent way. Senate Bill 40 does not impose any mandates, but it encourages schools, communities, groups, and public and private organizations to engage in educational and cultural activities that highlight the achievements and history of Hispanic Americans. By passing this bill, we will send a clear message that values diversity, inclusivity, and the recognition of many communities that contribute to our shared success. I respectfully ask for your support, and again, thank you for the opportunity to present this bill to you this afternoon.
Great. Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Can we get a perhaps sectional?
Yes.
By Ms. Goins.
To the chair, for the record, Deirdre Goins, staff to Senator Gray Jackson. Section 1 adds a new section to Alaska Statute 44.12. Section 44.12.183 will read Hispanic Heritage Month. It establishes the period between September 15th and October 15th of each year as Hispanic Heritage Month. Hispanic Heritage Month may be observed by schools, community groups, and other public and private agencies and individuals with appropriate activities to honor and recognize the contributions that Hispanic Americans have made in history and the culture of Alaska and the United States.
Great, thank you. Are there any questions for either the sponsor of the bill or staff? Okay. Hearing none, we will go ahead. I know we've got a couple people who are online. We'll go ahead and open up for invited testimony. On Teams, we have Anchorage School Board member Dora Wilson. Dora Wilson is the mom of three children, now young adults. She serves as the Alaska South Central representative on the Resource Family Advisory Board. She's also currently a member of the Anchorage School District School Board. Welcome. We can see you. I don't know if you can see us.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Again, my name is Dora Wilson, and I am calling in support of Senate Bill 40, Hispanic Heritage Month. I've lived, worked, and raised my three beautiful children in Alaska. I've been a therapeutic foster parent for the past 21 years, where me and my husband have had over 50 youth come through our home. I am a community outreach manager. I've served in many volunteer roles over the years, as well as multiple nonprofit boards. And thank you. As you stated, I am an elected member of the Anchorage School Board. I'm taking the time to share a few of my accomplishments because although my married name is Wilson, my maiden name is Garcia. To my knowledge, I'm the first Latina Americana that has been elected to the Anchorage School Board, and I'm only one of many Hispanics in Alaska that are working every day to advocate for our community and inspire our future generations. The Hispanic community in Alaska is very diverse, with roots in countries like Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Colombia, Dominican Republic, and Puerto Rico. Hispanics make up 7.7% of our Alaska population. The Anchorage School District is one of the most diverse school districts in the nation, with over 100 languages spoken by our students and families. Spanish ranks in the top 5 languages spoken. Establishing Hispanic Heritage Month in state law encourages our schools, community groups, public institutions, to educate students and the public about the achievements and traditions of Hispanic Americans. Hispanic Americans have contributed significantly to Alaska's workforce as well, particularly in industries such as healthcare, education, construction, fishing, and small business development. Recognizing Hispanic Heritage Month highlights the importance of these contributions and encourages greater participation in civic and economic life. And I would like to say thank you to Senator Gray Jackson. I appreciate your time and commitment to advocate for Hispanic Heritage Month and all the work you do to be inclusive of and to celebrate all Alaskans. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Wilson. Are there any questions? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, once again, thank you for your testimony. We now have somebody who might not be online yet. I don't think we were expecting somebody online, but she is not quite online. We're going to go ahead and open up public testimony and then just return to her when she gets online. We'll go ahead and open up public testimony. We have several people online, off net, on public testimony. First, we have Ms. Este, Joan Este from Anchorage. If you'd like to state your name and your affiliation for the record, welcome to the Senate State Affairs Committee.
Yeah, hi. My name is Joan Ryan Este. I have two last names, Ryan and Este. I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 40, and I want to thank Senator Elvie Gray Jackson for putting this forward. I'm also the board vice president of ELASES, a Latino Hispanic nonprofit here in Alaska. Hispanic Heritage Month is a vital celebration, not just for Latinos, but for all Alaskans, as it offers a unique opportunity to showcase the rich culture, history, and contributions of the Latino community to the state's vibrant identity. In Alaska, Latino businesses are playing an essential role in shaping the local economy and adding to the cultural mosaic of the state. Latino-owned businesses are growing throughout Alaska, bringing with them a wealth of tradition, flavors, and expertise. From restaurants offering authentic Mexican, Central, and South American dishes, to creative enterprises in fashion, art, and music, Latino businesses are helping to diversify the economy and enrich the local culture. These businesses not only provide goods and services, but they also become cultural hubs where people can experience the heart of Latino traditions and customs. Recognizing Hispanic Heritage Month in Alaska goes beyond acknowledging Latino culture. It helps everyone appreciate the depth of Latino contributions to society. It's a chance to open doors to new experiences, whether through tasting Latin-inspired dishes, learning about the history and traditions behind them, or simply engaging with a diverse community. For Latinos, this month serves as a time to share our vibrant customs, history, and flavors with the broader Alaskan population. It's a way to create connection, understanding, and appreciation across different communities. Everyone can embrace this opportunity to learn about cultural practices, whether it's through attending events, trying a new dish, or experiencing Latin dance and music. Moreover, Hispanic Heritage Month highlights the importance of inclusivity, showing that Alaska's rich cultural fabric is strengthened by every community, Latinos included. It's about ensuring that everyone's voice is heard and everyone's contributions are valued, creating a more cohesive and welcoming state. Latino businesses help to create jobs, support local economies, and foster a sense of community, whether it's a family-run restaurant, a community organization, or a small retail store. These businesses are integral to the social and economic life of Alaska. They offer opportunities for cross-cultural exchange, where Alaskans of all backgrounds can engage with one another and learn from diverse perspectives. So to conclude, Hispanic Heritage Month in Alaska is about much more than honoring the Latino community. It's about recognizing how Latino culture enhances the vibrancy and uniqueness of the state, from its flavors to its artistic contributions. Thank you very much, and I want to thank everyone for being here today. And thank you very much, Senator Elvie Gray Jackson.
Great. Thank you very much, Este. Ms. Este, are there any questions? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, we'll continue on off net where we have Mr. Felix Rivera in Anchorage. If you'd like to state your name and your affiliation for the record, welcome to the committee.
Chair Kawasaki and members of the committee, my name is Felix Rivera, and I serve as one of two Latino members of the Anchorage Assembly. Specifically, my family comes from the beautiful island of Puerto Rico. Thank you for having this opportunity to hear from Alaskans about the importance of celebrating and honoring, through state statute, Hispanic Heritage Month. As of the latest census data, Hispanic or Latino Alaskans represent 7.5% of Alaska's population. Given the 2020 national undercount of Hispanic and Latino communities across the country at 4.99%, it's safe to say that the community I am honored to be a part of represents closer to 1 in 10 Alaskans, with most of that population residing in Anchorage. We Latino and Hispanic Alaskans represent a rich tapestry of history and culture worthy of being honored and commemorated in perpetuity through Senate Bill 40. Right now and through April 13th, the Anchorage Museum is hosting an exhibit called Nuestra Huella to celebrate and recognize the contributions of Latino and Hispanic Alaskans to the political, economic, and social fabric of Anchorage and Alaska. A huge thank you to Senator Gary Jackson for bringing this bill forward. The Anchorage Assembly has passed a resolution honoring Hispanic Heritage Month for many years, well before my time began on the Assembly in 2017. I, and I'm sure other members of my community, would be grateful to have this same commemoration at the state level as a way to deepen our relationship with the state we call home. I fully support Senate Bill 40. Thank you for your time.
Super. Thank you. Mr. Rivera, are there any questions? Okay, hearing and seeing none, thank you very much for being online, Felix. Let's see. Are there any other folks who are online? There are no folks who are online. We did have an invited testimony, but we will try to reconnect with her in the future. Is there anybody else in the room who'd like to testify on Senate Bill 40? Okay, hearing and seeing none, we're going to go ahead and close invited in public testimony. Testimony can be received to the Senate State Affairs Committee at any time. The address for email is Senate State Affairs, all one word, Senate State Affairs at akleg.gov. We will go ahead and set Senate Bill 40 aside for a further hearing. I'd like to set an amendment deadline for Senate Bill 40 on Friday, February 28th at 5 p.m. close of business. If you have any amendments or potential amendments, just come to the office and or let Mr. Hayes know that you might have an amendment forthcoming, at least by Friday at 5 p.m. close of business. With that, Senate Bill 40 is will be set aside. Next, we will hear Senate Joint Resolution Number 6. We may have a presentation. We will bring forward the sponsor of Senate Joint Resolution. Senator Tobin is not here. Senator Tobin's staff, Mr. Mike Mason, and Chief of Staff Maggie Grenier is here. I don't actually know what your title is.
Mike Mason, I am staff to Senator Lukey Gale Tobin. Go ahead, Maggie.
For the record, Maggie Grenier, I am staff to Lukey Gale Tobin.
Okay. We are here to introduce Senate Joint Resolution 6.
Senate Joint Resolution 6 seeks to put the Alaska State Legislature on record supporting admitting Washington, D.C. as a new state. Specifically, SJR 6 calls on the President and the Congress to enact legislation granting statehood to the people of Washington, D.C. The goal is for that legislation to shrink the size of the current federal District of Columbia to only include federal lands and buildings. That would include the main symbols of our shared democracy, including the White House, the Capitol Building, the Supreme Court, and the National Mall. The new state that is envisioned by SJR 6 would include the residential areas of Washington, D.C. that includes a population of around 712,000. The current situation by the residents of Washington, D.C. is similar to the situation faced by the people of Alaska prior to statehood. To highlight the similarity, I would like to read a quote from a letter of support in your packet from the League of Women Voters of Alaska. From 1884 to 1912, Alaska was organized as the District of Alaska. Because Alaska's own campaign for statehood is relatively recent, and we still have citizens who remember our territorial status before 1959, when we had federal rule and no voting representation in Congress, it seems appropriate that Alaskans and the Alaska State Legislature should speak up in support of statehood for the citizens of the District of Columbia, who pay federal income taxes and serve in the U.S. military without full representation in Congress.
Once again, Mike Mason, I am staff to Senator Lukey Gill-Tobin. I would note that the District of Columbia Elections Act that was approved by Congress back in 1970 gave the Washington, D.C. area the ability to send a delegate to the U.S. House of Representatives. That delegate can participate in debates, but they cannot vote. Also, additionally, Washington, D.C. Is not represented in the U.S. Senate. I did want to note a couple of things that are included in the bill. One of which was that, if I can go here, in D.C., they are currently represented by an elected 13-member council of the District of Columbia and an elected mayor of the District of Columbia. They were granted limited powers of local self-government to relieve Congress of the burden of legislating on local matters. That occurred back in 1973. However, Congress and the President of the United States have historically interfered with the District of Columbia's self-government and their home rule by enacting many resolutions disapproving, amending, and repealing actions of the Council of the District of Columbia and the Mayor of the District of Columbia. Also, on several occasions, a majority of the voters of the District of Columbia have approved initiatives and referrals expressing the voters' desire for statehood. Finally, the U.S. government is facing a lot of challenges right now. There is very little attention being paid to the needs and the rights of Washington, D.C. Statehood would give those residents the right of self-determination that is currently lacking under exclusive federal control. We do have one invited testifier that I could introduce, if you don't mind, Chair Kawasaki.
Yes, we do have her on Teams. Yeah, if you'd like to make the introduction... we have Miss Wendy Hamilton.
Reverend Wendy Hamilton is a 30-year resident of Washington, D.C., former pastor of the Open Door Metropolitan Community Church, worked as a truancy counselor for the D.C. Public Schools, and has a bachelor's degree from Howard University. And I thank her for stepping in at the last moment to provide invited testimony.
Thank you, Reverend Hamilton. If you could just state your name and affiliation for the record. Oh, volume. We are checking on your volumes. If you could say something. No, still not getting it. Hang on. If you could just say something. Play some music in the background. Yeah, we can see her. We're just not hearing you on the feed here. No, we can't hear you.
Perhaps we could have her call in through the teleconference system?
Yes. We can. Maybe what we could do is have you call in to the legislative teleconference system.
I've got that number, Senator. And,
okay, Mr. Mason, if you'd like to repeat that number for Ms. Hamilton.
Wendy, that is these numbers are in an email that was sent to you earlier. The number is 1-844-586-9085. Once again, 844-586-9085. Perhaps we could take a brief at ease while she calls in.
Yeah. Ms. Hamilton, if you'd like to call in, we will go ahead and take another person who is off net who's called in to testify on the bill. So we will hear from you shortly. With that, we will go ahead. We do have a Sue Sharif with the League of Women Voters of Alaska who's online. If you'd like to state your name and your affiliation for the record, welcome to the Senate State Affairs Committee.
Hello. Good afternoon. My name is Sue Sharif. And I'm calling from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Alaska. And because one of the presenters already read verbatim part of my testimony, and because the resolution itself gives many justifications for passage of this resolution, I think I will just highlight something that wasn't mentioned. And I think for people that might be concerned about a large East Coast city becoming a state, I would like to point out that actually, although Washington, D.C. is a large city by our Alaska standards, the population of the district itself is only 689,500 people, which would place it as a state between Alaska and Vermont amongst the five smallest states. It would join the seven states, Alaska, Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Vermont, and Delaware, that have only one delegate in the House of Representatives. The district currently has a non-voting representative who can draft legislation but cannot vote. And I think the other the presenter gave most of the rest of my testimony, except I do need to say that the League of Women Voters is nonpartisan. It doesn't support or oppose candidates or parties, but it takes positions on issues after reaching consensus based on careful study. And this issue is one that several decades ago the League studied carefully and came to consensus that the time was right back in the 80s for D.C. statehood. And I'd also like to just take a minute to say, as an organization that was founded in 1920 on the passage of the 19th Amendment, it was very, very happy day to be testifying when the committee has considered Women's History Month, because our organization was formed by the very suffragists who are a part of American history, and the long and rocky road to ensure that all U.S. citizens have the right to vote. And we stand on the shoulders of our early leaders of the suffragist movement, Susan B. Anthony, Mary Church Terrell, Lucy Cat Chapman, Alice Paul, and Ida B. Wells. And so congratulations to the Senate State Affairs Committee for bringing this forward. Thank you, and especially to Senator L.V. Gray Jackson. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Sheriff. Are there any questions for Sue? I don't see any. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Let's see if we have our person who's called in. She hasn't quite called in yet. Okay, well, let's see if there's any questions of the committee for the sponsors, designee for the bill. I will actually start with a question. So this will be it will be the smallest state geographically and land miles. How would the state be able to come up with the revenue to operate as a state?
So one of the interesting facts, Mike Mason, staff to Senator Lukey Gilthoban. One of the facts that I found quite interesting was that residents of Washington, D.C. pay more in federal taxes per capita than any other state in the union. So they do have a tax base in the Washington, D.C. area. If you've ever visited there, there's a lot of people that visit the Washington, D.C. area. It is definitely a metropolitan area with a large tax base. So I think they would be able to support themselves.
Okay. Let's see if there's any other questions. I have another question. Okay. So if this were to become the 51st state, I imagine that there might perhaps be something considered an imbalance in the United States Senate. I guess, what do you think about that?
Mike Mason, staff to Senator Lukey Gilthoban. Well, in the big picture, this is a big policy call by lawmakers, whether you support kind of expanding the members of Congress and U.S. senators. There are some really good arguments about how we need more representation in Congress and in the U.S. House of Representatives and in Senate. So I think from my perspective, that is a good thing, having more people representing more people that are currently underrepresented. And I would note that D.C. currently has a larger population than Wyoming and Vermont.
Huh. Okay. Let's see. We have a question by Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you so much for bringing this forward. And I know that in our packet there are resolutions from a few other states, but do you know what the total number of states that may have sent resolutions supporting this action
are? So I could find that really quickly, but I know over the past few years there have been 100 such resolutions that have been filed. I think the number was approaching 35 states, but I can get that for you very easily.
Thank you, Mr. – thank you. 35 is good enough for me. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I do want to note one other thing, and this was something Senator Tobin asked me to be sure and pass along during this hearing, was that currently no other democracy denies the people of its national capital suffrage in its national legislature. So think about that. There's, you know, 700,000 people in D.C. that do not have a vote in Congress through their representative. And as far as we can tell, there's no other major democracy that has that. So...
Right. Okay. Thank you. Senator Yunt has a question.
So if this were to make it all the way to the end zone and they were to become their own state, do we have any – the resolution I noticed doesn't have an idea where we'd have the new seat of government.
Oh, the seat of government would stay exactly where it is. Essentially, the district of the Washington, D.C. district, the district of would be shrunk to include the federal infrastructure in Washington, what is currently Washington, D.C. So all of the federal buildings, all of the federal infrastructure would be within the District of Columbia, and then the new state would include essentially all of those residential areas that are part of the current District of Columbia.
Okay. My concern is that would kind of defeat the purpose of why D.C. was set up in the first place. But if it does make it all the way, then perhaps we could make the beautiful city of Wasilla, Alaska, the next seat of government. But that's all I got.
I would note one thing. There have been some concerns that to enact this, you would have to have a constitutional amendment because of the 23rd Amendment. But there's a lot of legal people out there that have noted that you can shrink the size of a federal district. You just can't enlarge the size of a federal district. And the District of Columbia has been shrunk once before. So you could basically shrink the size to incorporate the seat of government, and then the new state would be included with all of those residential areas that include those hundreds of thousands of people that are not currently represented in Congress.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator Yunt. Thank you, Mr. Mason. Let's see if our invited testimony has made it in yet. I don't seem to have her either.
Senator, I can try to reschedule her for another hearing.
Well, I was just going to say we can reschedule her for a future hearing because we will be setting Senate Joint Resolution 6 aside for a future date. I'd like to set a date for potential amendments for Friday, February 28th by close of business. Friday, February 28th by close of business. If you do potentially have an amendment that might take longer, just contact our office in the meantime. We will go ahead and set Senate Joint Resolution aside, and we will hear from Ms. Hamilton, Reverend Hamilton, at a future meeting. Okay, we will next bring up Senate Joint Resolution 10. Senate Joint Resolution 10 is Hmong Veterans Congressional Gold Medal. It is sponsored by Senator Willikowski. Senator Willikowski and his intern, Joshua McCose, will come up to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd give an introductory statement if I could, and then...
Senator Willikowski.
Take it over while he's setting up the very quick PowerPoint. Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senate Joint Resolution 10 is a companion to a House bill. It's bipartisan, bicameral effort to recognize the Hmong veterans of the Vietnam War. In the story is of the Hmong is not very well known. It is really a heroic and tragic story. In 1960, the CIA recruited tens of thousands of Hmong soldiers, some as young as 11 years old, to support the United States in Laos and Vietnam. The Hmong soldiers gathered intelligence. They engaged in conventional and guerrilla warfare. They flew combat missions. They directed airstrikes. When American fighter pilots and planes were downed, they would go into the jungle and they'd rescue them at times. A dozen or more would be killed rescuing just one American soldier. In fact, they died at an estimated rate of 10 times the rate of United States soldiers in the Vietnam War, with tens of thousands dying and tens of thousands of more being wounded. After the war, they were targeted by the Laos government, who labeled them enemies of the state. The government initiated systematic efforts to eliminate them. They deployed chemical weapons against them. They executed them. They chased them into the jungle. Many fled to get away from the executions and chemical warfare against them by trying to swim or create rafts that floated across the Mekong River. While they did that, they were shot at. Many of them were killed. It's an estimated tens of thousands were killed trying to cross the Mekong River to get away into Thailand. Those that did get into Thailand were then put in refugee camps where they suffered starvation. Many of them died of disease. And as part of the United States government promise to them when they recruited them was that we would accept them and that we would take care of them for helping out the United States during the Vietnam War. And so the United States has accepted them as refugees, which creates challenges of their own because many of them don't have birth certificates, they don't have passports, they don't have IDs. We estimate there are about 5,000 living in Alaska. It's a vibrant, a wonderful community here. And this resolution is part of a bipartisan effort to recognize their heroic efforts, helping the United States government, similar to what was done after World War II, where the United States recognized Filipino fighters by granting them the Congressional Gold Medal. This would similarly urge Congress to grant a Congressional Gold Medal to the Hmong veterans. And my staff has a very brief presentation, Mr. Chairman, and happy to answer any questions either now or later. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. We have Mr. McCose. Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name and your affiliation for the record.
For the record, my name is Joshua McCose. I am the intern for Senator Wilkowski. Today I'll be discussing the history of the Hmong veterans and their contributions to the Vietnam War, their sacrifices, and our efforts to award them with the Congressional Gold Medal. Who are the Hmong? The Hmong are an ethnic group from China, Laos, Vietnam, and Thailand. Many of them migrated to Southeast Asia centuries ago and mainland and maintained a distinct culture and language. During the Vietnam War, the Hmong were recruited by the CIA to assist in military operations in Laos. In 1961, the U.S. CIA covertly recruited and trained Hmong soldiers to encounter the North Vietnamese forces in Laos. They played a critical role in disrupting enemy supply chains, gathering intelligence, protecting U.S. strategic positions. Despite being heavily outnumbered, the Hmong displayed exceptional courage and resilience in battle. They went on reconnaissance missions, rescuing down American Air Force pilots. As Senator Wilkowski said, they suffered many immense casualties. Over 3,500 soldiers were killed and thousands more were wounded. They faced a death rate 10 times more than higher than that of U.S. troops in the Vietnam War. As well, children as young as 12 were recruited to fight due to the overwhelming loss of soldiers. After the Vietnam War, in 1975, the U.S. withdrew from Vietnam, leaving the Hmong, and they were behind, and they were left with facing a brutal retaliation from the Lao government. Many were executed, sent to re-education camps, and forced to flee into the jungle. Okay. and then when they integrated in the U.S., many of them settled in Alaska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and California. Today, they still continue to struggle with assimilation and cultural preservation. In 1997, the U.S. government formally recognized the Hmong contributions with the Laos Memorial in Arlington. In 2019, Alaska established Hmong American Veterans Day to honor their sacrifices. And there are ongoing efforts to secure a federal recognition. So this takes us today to today, where we're pushing for the awarding them the Congressional Gold Medal. U.S. allies such as the Filipino veterans of World War II have been honored with the Congressional Gold Medal. In 2023, U.S. Senator Gary Peters of Minnesota introduced S-3271, the Hmong Congressional Gold Medal Act, but it stalled in committee, and it had bipartisan support. The medal is the highest civilian honor in the U.S., requiring Congress, an act of Congress, to be awarded. I'll go into some history about the Congressional Gold Medal. So what is the Congressional Gold Medal? It's the oldest civilian honor awarded by Congress. It recognizes outstanding achievements and contributions to the U.S., U.S.'s history. Each medal is unique and designated by the U.S. Mint. One medal is struck and put on display at location by the choice of the honoree, and bronze replicas are for sale by the U.S. Mint. Historically, they have been awarded to figures such as George Washington and the Wright brothers, and have also recognized foreign allies, like I mentioned, the Filipino veterans of World War II. And the Hmong case is similar with their bravery, sacrifice, and unfulfilled promises from the U.S. So today, we're just the call to action would be to advocate for Congress awarding them the Congressional Gold Medal, and I urge on you to vote to move this resolution out of committee and vote for it when it comes to the floor. Any questions?
Great, thank you, Mr. Mercos. Are there any questions of the sponsor's designee or the sponsor of the bill, Senator Wilkowski? Okay, hearing and seeing none, thank you for the presentation. We do have some invited testimony. We do have online May Ramirez Shong. She is the CEO and co-founder of HEART, Inc., and that stands for Hmong Empowering, Advocating, Reforming Together, a nonprofit organization that's based in Anchorage and dedicated to supporting and uplifting the Hmong community, and is also a proud Hmong daughter. Welcome, May. If you'd like to state your name and your affiliation for the record, welcome to the State Affairs Committee.
First of all, thank you for this opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is May Ramirez Zhang, and I am testifying today as a proud Hmong daughter. I'm not just any daughter. I'm the daughter of former Colonel Fisher Zhang, a prominent leader in the Hmong community who had fought alongside General Lin Pao during the Vietnam War. He is one of many who bravely lived through the trials of the secret war and fought courageously for our people. And while it would carry profound significance to have him here today to share his experiences, the last thing I want to do is burden him with a painful memory. We call this beautiful state of Alaska our home, and today I testify before you to advocate for your cause, for a cause that is deeply meaningful to the Hmong people. The resolution urging the U.S. Congress to award the Hmong veterans of the Vietnam War the Congressional Gold Medal. See, the Congressional Gold Medal represents the highest form of national recognition for outstanding achievements and contributions. Each medal honors individuals, institutions, and events that have made a significant impact. And I believe it's time to extend this honor to the Hmong veterans who fought courageously alongside American forces during the Vietnam War. Reflecting back on my high school history classes, I remember learning about the horrors of the Vietnam War and the fears that surrounded the draft. However, at the time, I was unaware of the extensive involvement of my people in neighboring countries
fighting to protect those who were afraid to be recruited. The sacrifices made by the Hmong people in the industry, the many. And as the battle that they fought in Laos is often referred to as a secret war that is orchestrated by the CIA, not taught in history classes. The resolution honors the veterans who bravely fought, but today I'm here to amplify the voices of those who cannot speak for themselves, the mother, wives, daughters, and children of these courageous men and women who have made immense sacrifices. We owe them a profound gratitude. And I often find myself at loss when it comes to repaying the debt owed to the people who shed blood in a conflict that was not theirs to begin with. My heart aches for those who lost their families, their loved ones, and the very essence of their lives, the pursuit of a freedom that was not yet known to them. If there is one thing I can do, it's to share their stories and help recognize their efforts, that their stories will not be forgotten and that their sacrifices were not for nothing. The statistics that you read here does not fully capture the suffering endured by the Hmong people in the aftermath after the U.S. withdrew when the Lao government executed a genocide against the Hmong people. Families were hunted like animals, and many were affected by Agent Orange, with children paying the ultimate price. To this day, they continue to plead for assistance, yet their voices often go unheard. The story of the Hmong people remains largely untold. The sacrifices made by the Hmong people during the Vietnam War are no less significant than those of other allied forces recognized by Congress. As noted in the resolution, groups such as Filipino World War II veterans have received this Congressional Gold Medal for their bravery and their sacrifices. Why should the contribution of the Hmong people be seen as being less important? Failing to pass this resolution would be both unjust and dismissive to the lives that were lost in service to American soldiers during the Vietnam War. While this resolution addresses the events surrounding the sacrifices, let it also serve as a reminder of the Hmong people's story and their vital place in American history. So if there's one thing I can do today, is to ask that you join me in advocating for the passage of this resolution to urge U.S. Congress to honor the Hmong veterans of the Vietnam War with the Congressional Medal. Let us ensure that this story is never forgotten. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Ramirez. Are there any questions? I guess I kind of have a question. Maybe this is a technical question for the sponsor of the bill, but how would we find all of these folks who are Hmong veterans? Is there a place to find that? I guess that was going to be toward Ms. Ramirez, but it could be for Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah,
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. This, just to be clear, this is not awarding the Congressional Gold Medal to every single Hmong veteran. This is a symbolic medal that is awarded to the Hmong veterans and acknowledging the sacrifices, the service that they made on behalf of our country. And I think you probably could, actually. I think the Hmong community is close enough and tight enough that you probably could track down, quite frankly, every veteran. And we probably would try to do that, but this is not presenting a medal to everyone. It's one symbolic medal for all of them.
Thanks for that answer. Are there any other further questions for the sponsor of the bill? Let me go ahead and open up public testimony. I don't think there's anybody else. We do have the invited testimony and public testimony. Is there anybody who'd like to testify? I know Representative Nelson was here earlier but had to leave. We don't have anybody else in the room. We're going to go ahead and close public testimony. Public testimony, though, will be taken for Senate Joint Resolution 10, and you can send that to Senate State Affairs, all one word, Senate State Affairs at aklag.gov. We will have a deadline for amendments scheduled for Friday, the 28th at 5 p.m. If you think you may have an amendment but just can't get it in time, please contact the office or Mr. Hayes. We will go ahead and set Senate Joint Resolution number 10 aside at this time, and we will come to the conclusion of the Senate State Affairs Committee meeting. Thursday, February 27th, we will hear bills previously heard or scheduled. That is on Thursday at 3:30 p.m. We will meet here with bills previously heard or scheduled. Hearing no other business before the committee, we will go ahead and adjourn the committee, State Affairs Committee, at 4:20 in the afternoon.